Law & Order and its trademark format of half cop show and half lawyer show evolved into a massive TV franchise. The original Law & Order ended in 2010, but this year, in the middle of a broader conversation about policing and specifically the problems with police procedurals, NBC has decided to bring the original Law & Order back. The result is a strange effort to replicate an old success in a very different environment. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about the reboot of Law & Order on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today is Vulture TV critic Roxana Haddadi. Welcome back, Roxana.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also here with us is Catherine Van Arendog. She is also a critic for Vulture and New York Magazine, who writes about TV and comedy. Hi, Catherine. I can't believe it took us this long to have you.
I am thrilled to be here. Thank you.
And also joining us, of course, is our friend Christina Tucker, co-host of the podcast Wait. Is this a date? Welcome back, Christina.
Hello, hello. Very excited.
So Dick Wolf created the original Law & Order. It started in 1990, before a lot of people listening to this conversation were even born, and it ran for 20 years. They changed out the police officers, the district attorneys, the visiting defense lawyers, and judges. But one thing that remained mostly unchanged was the format. In roughly the first half, the police would investigate a crime. In roughly the second half, the district attorneys would try to prosecute someone who, by the way, might or might not turn out to be the right person, just like the police might or might not turn out to have arrested the right person. None of this reflected poorly, I guess, on the police officers or prosecutors. Original Law & Order almost never took you into the personal lives of the cops or the lawyers, with rare exceptions. It was typically about the case. But as the show expanded out into a broader franchise, there were spinoffs like Law & Order Special Victims Unit, that's your SVU, which had their own approaches. They fiddled with the balance of police and prosecution, and they got much, much more deeply into the personal lives of both. So the original Law & Order, as we mentioned, went off the air in 2010. In the summer of 2020, in part spurred by the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer, widespread protests led to, among a lot of other things, a discussion about policing and how it's portrayed in TV, which led to a whole new discussion about the original Law & Order and about SVU, about all the other police procedurals. This is all sort of necessary background for the decision to bring back the original Law & Order this spring. Sam Waterston, who started playing assistant DA Jack McCoy in 1994, when I, an old lady, was just out of college, is back to play Jack as the boss of the courtroom DAs Price and Maroon, played by Hugh Dancy and Odelia Halevi. On the police side, Lieutenant Kate Dixon, played by Cameron Manheim, oversees detectives Bernard and Cosgrove. Bernard, who was also part of the later seasons of the original show, is played by Anthony Anderson. And Cosgrove is played by Jeffrey Donovan, who you might know from lots of other things, including a long run as the lead of Burn Notice on USA. So that is all a very long run-up to make sure that we kind of have given the background. I want to go first to Christina. Are you a Law & Order person generally, I want to ask first?
I am. I'm a real Law & Order head, a real L&O head, L&O if you head. Will. Mm-hmm. Starting with that run of Jack McCoy and like whatever dark-haired ADA he had working by his side. Yeah. Those were like really the glory years for me.
Right.
Yeah, it was a real regular thing of my life, just coming home after swim practice and popping on some Law & Order. Yeah. Those were the days.
I think the original seasons that had both McCoy and Briscoe, played by Jerry Orbach. That's my sweet spot.
Yeah.
Christina, how do you feel about the new old Law & Order?
It's bad is the thing about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, I'm trying to separate it from my like love of the original. I'm trying to be fair and even-handed in my criticism here, but it is just bad. The idea that they're trying to comment on policing and race and gender and Me Too and Theranos even.
And QAnon and Bill Cosby and everything else.
Every social problem we've had in the last like 5 years, but not changing their format or really changing anything about how the show works, but just every now and then kind of tossing a glancing like, well, you know how cops are. Like, I don't know what this is doing or like why we have to be doing this. The writing, not great. It always kind of feels like an SNL skit in the beginning. Like, I keep waiting for one of them to be like, say something absolutely ridiculous and then it's like, LOL, this is a joke about Law and Order. This isn't actually the Law and Order you know and love. But no, they're still trying to pretend it is the Law and Order I love, and it is definitively not.
Yeah. Catherine, you wrote a piece during all of this kind of discussion about police procedurals that really stuck with me, that was about the centrality of police officers in police procedurals and the fact that police procedurals are structurally pro-police. Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So as we all were thinking about how we have been culturally primed to consider policing, I was thinking about the hundreds of hours of Law and Order and other police procedurals that I have watched in my life, and shows that I think we wouldn't necessarily describe as like a straight up police procedural, but the prestige-y ones. I was thinking about the way that TV so frequently has cop characters as the center character. And within the last 10 years, we started to see 10, 20 years, so many different kinds of policing shows, particularly full of anti-heroes. And it's often a point that is raised as like, see, TV is not just copaganda. Like, TV is showing us that police can be bad people too. And the thing that I was really sticking on as I was trying to think through this a couple years ago was, okay, but they're still the main characters, right? Like, even if we're seeing them as a bad version of policing, what we're still seeing is policing just constantly as our dominant filtering perspective.
And policing from the point of view of the police officer.
Yes.
As opposed to a show that would be about policing as it's experienced, yes, by a citizen.
100%. And so obviously that's something that can get trickier and is worth thinking through for shows like The Wire. But for Law and Order, it's just very, very, very clear that our main characters, the people who come back and back and back in every episode, are always the cops and then the district attorneys, the people who are literally disposable, like you have them for one episode and then they leave, are everyone else. And so what you're left with is really the only way of thinking through how crime works is starting from a police perspective. We are not culturally trained to start anywhere else. And Law and Order is a part of that.
Yeah. Roxana, I want to ask you, how do you feel like it's going, this new one? How's it going for you?
Yeah, it's bad. I feel bad being that reductive, but it's bad. And I think something that's really fascinating is Law and Order, to the point of everyone who's spoken before, sort of set the template for what this sort of TV show would become. And we're seeing now, so much so in the past 10 years, with the collapse between the lines of the police and the military, that we just have a lot of shows about both groups that set us in the mind of both groups. So the question becomes, what are you going to do differently, if anything? And I sort of expected that Law and Order might try anything different. But instead, I think it sort of sanded down the edges of the original. In the original, you would sort of get these last act twists, like an unexpected piece of evidence, someone new comes forward. There was sort of a complication, and in the later seasons, an ambiguity as to whether is the system doing the right thing. Law and Order is never the show to tell you that the system is wrong.
Right.
Its entire bread and butter is that the system works, and sometimes you need people making hard choices. But this season is just that surface level, well, sometimes cops need to make hard choices, and there isn't any depth behind that. And we're seeing that most with Donovan's new character, who complains about people filming things on their cell phones and complains about pushback. And it feels like Law and Order fainting at these criticisms and being like, look at how sad you've made this nice white police officer. Don't you feel bad?
I cannot tell what his role in the show is really supposed to be from the standpoint of the show, because he behaves in all these ways that are profoundly inconsistent with the idea of police officers being the heroes that Law and Order used to present them to be. And yet nothing really happens to him.
No.
And ultimately, he's usually right, and he's usually on the right side of it. It could not have been otherwise, right? They could not have just gone back to what they were doing before and done the show the same way without talking about the fact that you frequently had police officers who were doing things like threatening people with immigration enforcement to get them to talk.
Right.
They used to do that on Law and Order all the time. The cops used to do that all the time.
All the time.
And it was never presented as something that was ethically sketchy to do, unlike something like beating a suspect until they confess, which occasionally happened, but it was always presented as one of those like hard choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the stuff like, you know, threatening to sic immigration on people, this stuff happened all the time on the original show. And I think it could not have simply gone back to that without comment. So they've inserted all of this meta commentary. But I think ultimately what it comes down to for me is it's just really boring.
So boring.
It's so
extremely
boring.
Boring.
They forgot how to write an episode. As we have this conversation, the most recent one that I saw was kind of a QAnon spin that they did. First of all, the biggest thing they're going to in that episode is a debate about whether can you hold a commentator or a public figure responsible for what they inspire someone else to do with their rhetoric. This is something the Law and Order franchise has done a bunch of times.
So many times.
And there's nothing additional brought to this at all. Everybody is a cartoon. You know, all of the characters who come from this world in which this violent act originated, they just say all of the most obvious cartoony things. It's really boring. What happened to the red herring?
Yeah.
What happened to the fact that it's not this person? It's actually this other person. I don't think that the overarching, you know, attempts to address issues are working at all. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the storytelling mechanics have fallen totally apart.
I mean, I knew kind of from the first episode when normally there is that pause when they're looking at a body and someone like, say, a Lenny Briscoe would say he went to get takeout and someone took him out. And instead, Anthony Anderson says, every victim deserves respect, even those who have been accused of raping over 40 women. And I knew kind of from then that this was just not, they were just like, so adjacent to the what made the original work when it worked, and they just can't quite get there again. And it just feels like everyone's kind of going through the motions and like has no investment in like what their characters are, who their characters are. Sam Waterston seems so tired and bored, and I just want more for my guy, my absolute king, Jack. It's just, it's very upsetting to watch.
Yeah, Roxana and I had a conversation about this, that one of the really major problems with this new revival is that every single episode is ripped from the headlines in the most dramatic, overwrought, over-intense, and obvious way. And part of the problem is that they only have a 10-episode first season order, right? They don't have that sort of roomy 24-episode, let's just create a status quo feeling, and I'm sure are trying to throw the most extreme things they possibly can at the wall to get viewers. I can imagine why they've made those choices. But if you only have super celebrities and January 6th ripoffs and Elizabeth Holmes Theranos karaoke, then what you're creating is not Law and Order about crime in New York City. What you're creating is Dateline with a Law and Order skin, right? It means that none of what is happening feels like it is ever a day-to-day work experience for these law enforcement officers or for any of the DAs. I mean, you have to imagine that the Hugh Dancy character is just coming into his office every single day and saying like, wait, there's another crime of the century that is happening now, the very next day after the previous crime of the century that I had today. Like, I mean, look, if we're going to do copaganda, it would be nice if we could dial it back into the realm of realistic, not even realistic, but not totally sensationalized environments so that we can understand who these police officers actually are when they are forced to encounter something that just feels regular.
I almost wonder if it's a very clever tactic by the writers, because now they don't need to engage with real world issues. Mm. You don't need to see how does Jeffrey Donovan's extremely terrible character handle someone on the street. How does he interact with a quote unquote normal person? Is he going to throw his weight around on like a bodega owner or a taxi driver, which were very common Law and Order 90s tropes?
Yeah.
He's just interacting with a Britney Spears mashup. You know what I mean? So I almost think it sort of takes a little bit of real world heat off of the detectives. Yeah. It makes for a very boring viewing experience.
Yeah.
Because shout out to Dateline and Keith Morrison. I love that show and they know what they're doing. But this version does not seem to grasp that.
In no way do I mean to be romanticizing original Law & Order as being anything other than what it was. It did have that same kind of sensational, you know, all the kids are going crazy in Central Park. Like, it did all of that really toxic business as well. But somehow they were writing a more watchable show. And this is where I confess that I had long been somebody who watched not only a lot of Law & Order, but also a lot of SVU, which I found to be kind of problematic, but highly watchable mm-hmm. in this way. Mm-hmm. This show is just not even watchable in that way. It's not no. engaging. There's no guilty yeah. pleasure element to this in terms of like, well, it's problematic, mm-hmm. but I find it just riveting or something like that. This no. is just bad TV, man.
Yeah. And it's too like shiny also. Like, I know a lot of that is just the way that we do TV now, but like everything is too well lit. All of the courtrooms are like too bright. There's no like kind of clutter in the DA's office when they're like walking through the halls. Everyone's offices are like huge and palatial. It just like doesn't feel like a real lived setting. And the same with kind of, you know, your iconic secondary and tertiary characters who like stumbled across a body. Like, they all just look like actors now instead of like yeah. people that you would see in New York. And it doesn't feel real yeah. or fun in any way anymore.
There's also a line in the first episode. For Christina, it was that cold open joke that did not happen. And she was like, this is how I know it's bad. For me, it was 10 minutes later was they were questioning the first witness. It was one of the police officers who said, I know we already asked you this, but did you see anything? And she said, no. Wait, there was a guy in a hoodie. And I thought, what? You're not even going to try to punch yeah. that up like one more level. Give her a tiny bit more pause. Ask her for security. Just literally anything between the most naked from this part of the plot to the next part of the plot. Because guess what? Yeah. It was the guy in the hoodie. He was the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Once you identify the guy in the hoodie on this show, in all likelihood, that's the answer. Yeah. And all they're going to do is debate the national politics that are connected to it for the next 45 minutes instead of whatever else might have happened. For me, where you get into this like bluntness of like everything is about whatever they think the hot issue is, comes up with stuff like in this most recent one, the guys who find the body actually see a vehicle hit someone, what they're chatting about, like normally the normal New Yorkers who are like walking up on the dead body, mm-hmm. they'll be like, you know, my wife, man, I just can't please her. I got her a thing for her birthday and she just didn't like it at all. And the other guy would be like, man, you got to get your wife better birthday presents. In this one, they're walking up and the guy's like, you can't say anything on Twitter. People call you a racist. And I was like, what are you doing? I was like, everything does not have to be hottest issue of the moment. Like, bring back the regular New Yorkers who are in the middle of talking about their, you know, irascible kids when they suddenly find a dead body. Like, that's the...
Yeah.
That's the magic. That's where the magic happens.
I long for that Mulaney bit, that John Mulaney yes. bit where it's the guy stacking boxes. And he's like, yeah, I saw something, because at least he's stacking boxes. He had yeah. a job right. to do other than...
be there for questioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Here he would be stacking the boxes while being like, you know, I was right in the middle of my meeting of the Society of High Rollers for Venture yeah. Capital. And it's like, what? What?
Or like, hey, I'm stacking these boxes. They came in from China. Man, I don't know how about those Chinese goods. I just feel like we really need a trade war. And then you're
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It is really, it used to have those things where it'd be like, you have to think about whether what Jack McCoy is doing, which is admittedly sketch, mm-hmm. like you think of him as somebody who has basically good intentions in the sense that he basically wants to catch the right person. Basically, he's justice oriented. but he's doing these really sketchy things. Now that character is just kind of this angry, there's none of that kind of humor to him. There's none of that, I don't know, rabble-rousing element. He just sits there and pronounces. Yeah. It is really sad.
This is not the man who once poured a whole thing of bullets onto, you know, a prosecution table to make a dramatic courtroom point during sure his closing. Isn't. Like, that's my man. Like, that's my king. What yeah has happened to him? And now he just kind of sadly is like, well, race does exist, but also, have you heard they're trying to defund the police? Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, like, what is that doing? Like, that doesn't tell me anything about anybody's point of view or perspectives. It's very upsetting.
He used to be very mischievous, and now it's mm-hmm just sort of that repeating of, frankly, I would think maybe Dick Wolf talking points. And again, reaffirming that idea of like, yeah, the system is flawed, but it's all we have. You can't take our resources away. It's very succinct in a not interesting way. But to the point of what else could this show have done, I don't know how else you tackle these issues, but I have to think there has to be a way that's more engaging than just this very surface level repeating of, you know, viral Facebook memes for your grandparents. Right. There has to be something different right than yeah what we're getting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I am maybe rosily misremembering some of my experience of the original franchise, but I have memories of several episodes from the first run of this show where the ending note was not "the system mm-hmm is all we have." The ending note was like, "This feels terrible. I don't think anyone's interests have been served. I don't know where to go from here." Like, there is a repeated final shot from the original franchise where it's like everyone drinking in a bar because that's all they had. Like, yeah, I guess all we can do is come back the next day, which is a very different statement than the justice system is all we have. It's the best thing, right?
There were bleak endings on that original show for yeah sure.
Many.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting in the context of how I think a lot of people watched Law and Order, which was via marathon, right? Mm-hmm. Part of it is that strap in, it's Saturday, it's cold outside, 7 hours of Law and Order. And the rhythm of it is that sort of procedural, the case comes up and then an ending happens. But the really honestly almost radical thing about what it did sometimes was to say like, nope, no ending. Sorry.
Yeah.
Now we gotta move on. And I think part of it is that this season is now divorced from that kind of marathon cable programming thing. It's hard to imagine anyone wanting to spend time with multiple episodes of this in a sitting, although I did do that. oof. And I really, really had hoped that it was going to feel a little bit more like that when they came back. And wow, is it just not here.
And like, look, I know the Gilded Age took every theater actor off of everyone's call sheets, but like this lack of like good defense attorneys and judges, I'm like, what is happening here? We need some character actors to get into this space. And really, I mean, the last episode was only thrilling for a moment because there's Dylan Baker. At least mm-hmm I feel comfortable to see Dylan's face in this kind of procedural setting.
Look, I love Cameron Manheim. I've loved Cameron Manheim for years. I always want to see her and stuff. I don't think they're making much use of her in this, but I want like my colorful defense attorneys and judges. Where's your Fran Lebowitz? Where are your really like cool, interesting judges and lawyers?
Yeah. I mean, I agree that the minor character performances and Cameron Manheim is so underwhelming. If it were just one episode or like just a few really notable where you're like, ooh, man, then you could think, okay, maybe it is that the Gilded Age took all of the theater
right
actors.
Right,
but
right
because it is so universal, that to me suggests that there is something happening on the level of directors and showrunners where they are not giving people, like maybe instead of that take, you could do another one and give it a little, you know, just pull a little spice on it. And that is the level of production that does not seem to be happening here to its yeah serious detriment.
You know, I watched the episodes and I was depressed by them. And I was like, well, now I have to watch a classic episode. Like, I need to look at what I know Law and Order can be and like wash this away from my mind because this mm-hmm is not working for anybody.
Mm-mm. Not working at all. I think that is our joint verdict.
Dun, 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 dun.
Absolutely. Well, of course, now that we have given you our verdict, we want to know what you think about the reboot of Law & Order. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Roxana Haddadi, Christina Tucker, Catherine Van Arendonk, thank you so much to all of you for being here. This is a panel of my dreams.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, sign up for our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. This episode was produced by Anna Isaacs and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about Our Flag Means Death.